Suppose you want to eat right, healthy, and you want to know the best science behind the food you eat. But when you start to dig into things, the results of nutritional studies can seem confusing, maybe even contradictory. Is coffee good for our health or not? I hope so. Could a glass of red wine a day help keep the doctor away? The scientific consensus for a lot of questions like these isn't always clear. It's probably safe to assume that at least an apple a day won't hurt us. There's pretty solid evidence on fruits and veggies. But what if a nutritional study found that a daily dose of your favorite ice cream could provide some health benefits? On average, we eat more than 20 pounds of ice cream and frozen desserts every year. That's a lot of sugar and saturated fats. How is it possible there could be a health benefit to that? We're in Wisconsin. We might want it to be true. Our next guest reported on findings that suggest it might be true, but the idea has gotten a chilly reception from many researchers. We'll follow that story and then talk to a local registered dietitian nutritionist about how we can use what the science says about our food to make better health decisions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you try to follow what the science says about nutrition? Have you tried and given up? And with ice cream, how often do you eat it? Would you eat ice cream more if there really were a health benefit? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. David Johns is a public health historian and a journalist. He recently wrote a piece in The Atlantic titled Nutrition Science's Most Preposterous Result. You can find a link to that story at WPR.org/Central Time. David, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks so much for having me.
What started you down this ice cream trail, David?
Well, I got this funny tip from somebody kind of in the broader public health world that I was talking to for a completely different reason, that basically, a doctoral student at Harvard had hit upon this very surprising finding that consuming about a half cup of ice cream a day was associated with a reduced risk of heart problems among diabetics. And, you know, obviously this was like a very strange result, not exactly what a doctoral student was, expecting to find. It was something that was met with a lot of skepticism by the kind of more senior scientists at Harvard School of Public Health there, one of the most influential nutrition departments in the country. But as I looked into it, and as I this was just sort of like funny for me at first, or this kind of curiosity. But as I dug into it, I discovered that actually there was this kind of puzzling paper trail in the scientific literature that went back a couple decades that other researchers had found this, where basically eating ice cream was associated with a lower risk of diabetes, which was just like too, you know, so surprising and such a curious thing that I had to dig in further and write about it.
As the scientists you talked to in writing this article looked into that, what did they do to try to figure out, what's wrong with these numbers, which was, I think, their working assumption?
Yeah, first they were like, okay, you know, there's random, weird, spurious results can pop up all the time in science. That's completely, you know, typical of scientific research. And in this case, the findings were based on large-scale observational epidemiology studies, which is where they basically start with a healthy population and they follow them over time. They keep track of what they eat based on dietary questionnaires, and they associate what they're eating with various kinds of health outcomes. In this case, they were looking at, metabolic disease and diabetes. So at first they were like, okay, we got to just check the numbers. You know, maybe there was a data entry error. Maybe there was just something that we didn't, you know, we forgot to check for some kind of confounding or some kind of bias that was in the data. But basically they did that and it all checked out. They tried all kinds of different ways for testing this particular dissertation finding that I'm describing, and they basically couldn't make it go away, right? So then they, you know, from there, as they dug into this question further, there were other kinds of explanations that they hit upon that they think might explain the finding in a way that doesn't suggest that ice cream is actually the cause of, you know, a reduced risk of diabetes. I can explain that further if you want me to.
Yeah, one of those reasons, as I understand it, and I've seen this and talked about on the air about alcohol, is the idea that, okay, if I'm getting less healthy, I might have cause to avoid foods that I think are unhealthy, like, say, ice cream. So that might be adding unhealthy people to the no ice cream side of the equation and skewing the results. How did scientists look at that part of the story?
Exactly. So this is a phenomenon called reverse causation. This is one possible explanation for how people kind of explain this ice cream finding. Like maybe the easiest way to think about reverse causation is, you know, in these studies, even though they're following people over time, they're not, the data that they're collecting is not super granular. So sometimes you can't tell whether the effect caused the disease or the disease caused the effect in a, or the exposure rather. So like a really simple way of understanding this is in the scientific literature, then there have been connections found between mouthwash use and mouth cancer. Right. So when these first popped up, people are like, maybe mouthwash causing mouth cancer. Actually, based on a little further digging, they discovered that no, people with mouth cancer were having bad breath. So they were using mouthwash. So it was the disease that was causing the exposure, not the exposure causing the disease. And as you said, the theory with regard to this ice cream stuff was basically like maybe some of the people were developing kind of like pre-diabetes. And so those people were either being told by their doctors or kind of other of their own volition, like, you know, I got high cholesterol, I got high blood pressure. Maybe I need to cut back on, you know, a range of foods that they think of as unhealthy. So kind of the sick people or the people who were getting sick were cutting back on ice cream. So the only people who were left eating ice cream were the healthier people. So that might skew the data a little bit. There's, you know, but there's other explanations for how it could be, or it could be real.
Talking to David Johns about a piece in the Atlantic titled Nutrition Science's Most Preposterous Result, looking at the science and nutrition of ice cream. Now, David, another complicated thing is a lot of these reports that you write are self-reported. You might ask me, Rob, how much ice cream actually is frozen custard? How much frozen custard did you eat yesterday? Oh, a couple scoops. Well, Rob, scoops are pretty big, right? Like how we report how much we eat might skew the data.
Exactly. So the data here are based on what they call food frequency questionnaires. So it's basically you ask people how often you eat specific foods, and they only collect these, you know, every 4 years on average, in a bunch of these studies, that's the case. So yeah, you know, if you ask people what they eat, generally these types of questionnaires of, you know, I don't know, there's been some criticism of them in general within scientific literature, but they do a pretty good job of kind of ranking foods that you eat versus don't eat and kind of how frequently you eat them. So like, you know, if you eat yogurt, you know, if you're a person who eats raisins, you know, and that can give a sort of rank order. But in terms of like how much you eat of them. So like you said, with regard to ice cream, there's a tendency to say that you eat healthy foods more often than you do, and to say, well, yeah, you know, I didn't eat that whole tub of, you know, you're probably not going to report that you ate a whole tub of or a whole pint of, you know, Ben and Jerry's in front of the television when, you know, and you're going to say, well, yeah, I had a, you know, a small bowl, whatever. So that can skew the data.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Gail is with us in Fish Creek. Gail, hi.
Hi. Well, I'm an ice cream eater. I have been my whole life, and I'm up there. So one thing that we know, though, that got handed down, like from grandparents, you know, great-grandparents and all the way up, is that you have a glass of cold water when you have ice cream, because that helps to thin it out in your digestive system. Then it's easier for your body to digest, but you still get the fun of ice cream. So it's that water that might be a factor. And I'm wondering if that showed up in any of the small print any of the documentation that your guest has been looking at.
Gail, I got to ask, do you get more brain freeze when you do that, ice cream and cold water?
Oh, no, but you really feel good when you're having the water, because you know that you have the ice cream and it's not going to be like having ice cream.
Gail, thanks for the call. David, I'm guessing the research didn't get this granular. I don't know if there's going to be anything to that water ice cream combo, but it points toward another complicating factor. Usually we don't just eat one food. There might be interactions between different things we consume at the same time. How does that get factored into research?
Yeah, I can't say I have heard of that.
Me
water
neither.
Theory. But, you know, I think that, you know, yeah, could be a double dose of brain freeze there, but also could fill you up in some way, or at least temporarily. Yeah, and certainly in these studies, you know, they lump together all the ice creams, right? So it's not like you know, they're not testing mint chocolate chip versus butter pecan versus, you know, it's just in these questionnaires, they just ask about ice cream. So there's a little, you know, you're looking through a kind of hazy lens there. But yeah, the other thing that in nutrition research that's very difficult is if you eat one food, that means you're basically not eating the other, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, you can't, you know, people talk about randomized trials where you're testing say a pharmaceutical, you can give people a placebo. So they're either getting a drug or they're not getting the drug. And so you can do a very precise test of like adding one thing and, you know, versus, you know, not having it in the diet. But with diet, there's always a kind of replacement aspect, which is just an added thing that makes nutrition science research so very difficult. So if you're eating ice cream, what does that mean you're not eating, right? You know, whatever that replacement food might also have an effect on your health, or presumably does have an effect on your health. So it's an additional complication to why these studies are so very hard.
Yeah, I don't want placebo ice cream. David, as we wrap up, has this changed your ice cream eating behavior?
It hasn't. I mean, I have to confess that I was an ice cream eater before I did this research, and I remain an ice cream eater afterwards. But I would say, you know, it's probably not cause for going and digging in the freezer thinking that it's going to like, you know, protect you against diabetes. But, you know, my theory is that there probably are other good reasons for eating ice cream besides thinking about the health aspects.
David, thanks a lot for sharing this with us.
Thanks so much. It was fun.
That was David Johns, public health historian and journalist. He's got a piece in The Atlantic about the science and the research when it comes to the health impact of ice cream. We've got a link at WPR.org/Central Time. Up next, a Wisconsin nutritionist joins us to help us sort out all that health news and food news we see and sort it into our decision making. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you feel overwhelmed sometimes by news about what is and isn't good for us to eat? How do you sort through it? Call 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're digging into the world of nutrition science and the connections between the food we eat, the health outcomes we can expect. Started with a public health historian who shared the scoop of a number of stories that found some possible health benefits to ice cream. Now, a nutritionist joins us with advice on how to evaluate the kind of food and health news we see and make good eating decisions. Breanne Thornton is a registered dietitian nutritionist at UW Health and UW Madison. Breanne, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm guessing as a nutritionist, you get questions from not just clients, but friends and others. Hey, should I eat blank? Is this healthy for me? Is this something that you hear all the time?
Yes, I commonly get questions from, you know, articles that people are reading or seeing online, and then I have to dive into the evidence to pick it apart and really understand the study that it's based on.
And then just talking to David just now, it seems really complicated in some cases to sort out the evidence. What did you think of his ice cream journey and what he shared there?
Yes, it is really difficult to pick apart the research that they're using to base these articles on. But I really think he had a great analysis that he shared with everyone. He talked about that it's an observational study, and observations don't always equal causation. And really, you know, the gold standard for evidence is a randomized clinical trial, which is difficult to do when you are studying nutrition and have maybe less funding for something like that.
I'm guessing there are some pretty solid nutritional guidelines out there. Like, I think we're always going to say that adding to our fruits and veggies is going to be good, and probably we're never going to benefit by eating more potato chips and soda, right?
Right. So we do know that ultra processed foods have negative impacts on our health, and the DASH diet and American Heart Association really have strong recommendations that are based on years of research, not just one study, that show decreasing intake of processed foods really is best for our health and more focused on those nutrient dense, less processed foods.
Now, how much of dietary advice is, you know, this is one size fits all, everybody can benefit from this, versus, hey, I'm a person with, you know, my own physical condition, maybe particular health conditions. How much is it helpful to individualize our diets?
It's really essential to individualize a diet. So we all have different genetics. We have different factors like age and gender that contribute to our health risk. And then we have multiple conditions to consider. So we can't just make one recommendation for all people for their heart if we're not considering their gut function or their blood sugars as well.
How do you, working with a client, how do you start to sort that out when a patient has those conditions? What do you do to recommend particular diets?
I really look at the whole person. So I start with learning about them and what they typically like to eat during the day, their physical activity level and what they're able to do. And then we look at their health record. So we look at their labs and their blood pressure, and we figure out where is a place that we want to start. And really, we focus on one or two things to do, because if we try to do more than that, often it gets challenging and maybe not maintainable to do.
I wanted to ask about that in particular. Like, we might know what's good for us, but setting up habits that fit those good foods into our lives, or in my case, habits that cut those bad foods out of our lives, how do we start to make those changes?
Yeah, it really starts with what you're ready to work on. So if you know it's getting to be summer and it's easier for you to eat vegetables, let's focus on that. If exercise is hard for you right now because of joint pain, we don't need to focus on that right now. But I think starting with something that you're ready to work on and that feels realistic is really important when we're trying to think about health goals, and knowing that it can take about 12 weeks to establish a new habit.
How do we make that habit successful? How do we, you know, not just go to the grocery store one time, buy that new food, maybe let it rot in the fridge, maybe eat it, but actually get to that 12 weeks of habit forming?
It really takes a lot of support from other people in your home, and you have to think about your internal motivation. Sometimes that number on the scale feels like it's really important, but really it's that we want to live a long, healthy life, and we want to see someone in our family have an exciting milestone like a wedding or have a baby. So we have to think about those factors that are really important to us. And then again, starting small. So if we want to increase our vegetable intake, maybe just buying one vegetable that we know we like, prep it, wash it, and chop it, have it ready to go. And then, you know, you're adding it to one meal versus saying, I'm going to eat salad every day. That can feel a little daunting.
Now you, I see, specialize in nutrition and interstitial cystitis. Can you talk about what goes into understanding nutrition with a, you know, a very particular condition like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of root causes that happen with our health. And so we need to consider what is causing these issues. When we have high blood pressure, you know, it's not a medication will lower blood pressure, but it's not getting to what's causing it. And it's what's causing it is maybe lack of activity, stress, or you need to lower your sodium intake. So I really focus on getting to the root cause and looking at the person as a whole to help them make changes.
Sometimes in the news, we get the idea, okay, this food is bad, this food is good. Can you talk about, you know, just moderation? Maybe we're not going to go on the all ice cream diet, but maybe it's not a disaster if we have it every week or two.
Right. So the DASH diet does encourage us to limit our sweets, but basically not every day. Less than five times a week is really reasonable. And we also need to think about the portion, which I think he mentioned. So a half a cup of ice cream is actually something that the food labels have changed the portion size, because that doesn't seem real reasonable. So most portions are 2/3 of a cup. So we want to think about how often we're having it and the portion. And we want to think about balance, because if we say we're never going to eat ice cream again, that's probably not going to happen. And then we end up overdoing it in the future. And then we move away from a healthy habit we were trying to stick to.
Now, when you see a new news story about a nutritional study that finds food X or drink X is surprisingly good for you or surprisingly bad for you, how do you read that? How do you try to figure out, hey, is this something that we need to take into consideration here, or is this just kind of a blip?
Yeah, I learn a lot from my patients. They tell me about new products coming on the market, and I look at the food label and kind of see if there's any research that has popped up on it. But it really takes a lot of critical analysis when we're looking at a specific food or a specific research study to make sure that we are understanding exactly what it is and not just reading between the lines or reading one line from a research study.
a lot of times emotion can be tied into our food choices, maybe moral judgment if we're eating a food that's bad for us. How much does that affect your patients?
I think especially over the last couple of years with everything that's been going on in the world, emotional eating is a concern for people, and food does make us feel good in the moment, but we need to understand if there's any other healthy ways that we can cope with that emotion. So I think that getting the right support from your provider, maybe a mental health provider, and just making sure that you are supported in all ways so that we're not turning to food always for comfort. Yes, it's celebration and yes, it's nourishment, but we want to have healthy ways to cope with emotions as well.
As we wrap up, Brianna, I'll ask you the same question I asked David earlier. Just hearing about this journey about ice cream research affect your decision to eat ice cream more, less, not at all?
I don't think it does. You know, this is an interesting consideration. I think that it really just reiterates the DASH diet saying that all foods fit in moderation. And I think if you want to go out for ice cream with your family in the summer, you should do it.
We'll leave it there, Brianne. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Brianne Thornton, registered dietitian nutritionist with UW Health and UW Madison. She joined us today to help us understand a little bit about nutritional science and the connections between what we eat and how it affects our health. We heard earlier from public health historian David Merritt Johns about his article in The Atlantic looking at scientific findings about the health impacts of eating ice cream and why it's so complicated in some cases to sort out, to connect a straight line between the food we eat and our overall health.